Scrooge was right. What I like best about Christmas in the desert is the conspicuous absence of Christmas. By late December, the cone-nosed humbugs are gone, and all the horny elf toads retired into their burrows for the season. When somebody asks me what I think of Christmas, nobody ever does, I reply, not much. Easy to avoid it out here in the rocks. Think about Ebenezer Scrooge and Bobby Riggs, the twin patron saints of us middle-aged crypto-liberals. Crypto-liberal? Well, sure, why not? I've been called other names even worse. Misanthrope, sexist, elitist, crank, barbarian, anarcho-syndicalist, wild conservative. And my favorite, from a Maoist lady in New York, she called me a creeping fascist hyena. Quite true, so far as it goes. You can't please everybody. But they forget to add that I'm a pig lover, too. The pig I'm talking about is the one known also as peccary or javelina, the wild pig of the Arizona desert. Not a true pig exactly, according to zoologists, but a good approximation.
Good afternoon. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Coming up on today's show, the Wilderness Workshop and their screening of Wrenched, the Legacy of the Monkey Wrench Gang. The screening takes place Thursday at Pepke Auditorium at the Aspen Institute at 5 o'clock. Dave Foreman will be there. He's an original monkey wrencher and founder of Earth First. Wrenched is the true story of Edward Abbey and the brand of civil disobedience that came alive in the pages of his work. His seminal novel, The Monkey Wrench Gang, was based in part on the real-life characters and their take-no-prisoners approach to defending the environment. The film is the story of how Abbey lit the flame of environmental activism and gave the movement its soul. Dave Foreman had been interested in environmental sciences since childhood, and from 1971, he became involved with wilderness protection. Between 1973 and 1980, he worked for the Wilderness Society as Southwest Regional Representative in New Mexico and the Director of Wilderness Affairs in Washington, D.C. From 1976 to 1980, he was a board member for the New Mexico chapter of the Nature Conservancy. In April 1980, Foreman, along with friends, took a week-long hiking trip in the Pinacate Desert. It was during this trip that Foreman is believed to have coined the phrase Earth First. The movement that subsequently bore that name was inspired in some part by the writings of Edward Abbey. Dave Foreman joins me today, along with Will Rausch, the conservation director of Wilderness Workshop, and Justin Patrick, the communications associate. You have a sore throat, and you talked about your travels in Indonesia and how bad it was there. This morning, the headlines were Beijing, and people are being advised to stay indoors or to wear masks. Could you just comment about where we find ourselves today in this year heading into 2016, where we are as far as stewarding the planet?
Well, I'm 69 years old, and in my lifetime, the world's population has tripled. That makes me the first generation to see that happen. From AD 1, it took 1,500 years for the population to double. And now in 69 years, it's tripled. I was on Bali, which is one of the most wonderful places there is, but it's grossly overpopulated. We were on a liveaboard dive boat out in eastern Indonesia, on these remote islands that had really very few people, but children everywhere. And there were just fires all over these remote islands as people were clearing land off for more farms. And then there was big fires back in Borneo and for making palm oil plantations. And so the whole area was just covered with smoke. Even out in the middle of the ocean. So it's just a sign of what overpopulation, over-industrialization, over-consumption is doing. We're taking away wildlife habitat everywhere we can. We saw some people out in a remote island who are notorious for poisoning reef fish to collect. And it just goes on and on and on, no matter where you go.
Well, let me ask a little bit of a potentially provocative question. Is it a first world problem that we should... Do you know what... let me see if I can ask it in a different way. We have the luxury, perhaps, in this country anyway, of having these big, beautiful spaces that we need to protect, and we want to protect them for recreation and for enjoyment of wilderness. Whereas in, say, Indonesia, and you're talking about reef fish, that's someone's livelihood, maybe. So how do you square that in the whole world?
Well, I think we square it by the fact that all the dive guides were Indonesians, and they get big tips, they make a good living, they have a good life, and so in that way, recreation on the reef is contributing to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
On the island of Bali, all along the north coast, there were dive resorts, and that's a sustainable industry, more or less. Let's take Mongolia, one of the least developed countries in the world. They have a vibrant National Park Service. They have plans to protect 30% of the whole country of Mongolia by 2030. And about half of their protected areas aren't for recreation. They're closed to visitation. And so we see some countries that we think of as really backward that are taking a real lead. And the Mongolians claim to have the oldest protected area in the world that was set up by Genghis Khan. So while it's somewhat true that the United States and Canada and Australia have taken a leading role in protecting wilderness, it's not true that the concept is unknown elsewhere, or that it's being foisted on the rest of the world by us.
Does it make you hopeful, then?
Oh, yeah. It's one of the more hopeful things I've seen, and it's not just in the third world. For example, I came up with the word rewilding in about 1992, I think. And I hear rewilding all over the world now. The idea that we have to restore wild lands, that we have to connect habitats, that sort of thing. Rewilding has really taken off in Europe, of all places. Europe is planning to have 10% of its land as restored wilderness. And they're talking about reintroducing lynx in Scotland. And so we're in southern Africa, we are seeing some very large trans-border parks being put together that can act as nature habitats. But then at the same time, we see Botswana leasing a big park, a very huge park that's part of that, for fracking. And so it's back and forth. And everywhere we go, or everywhere you look, the population continues to increase.
Right.
Habitat continues to be chewed up. It continues to be fragmented. We see more and more pollution in places like China and Indonesia from development and overpopulation. So it's, and look at the Roaring Fork Valley with the growth in it, and how is that going to fragment habitat?
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Dave Foreman, an American environmentalist and co-founder of the environmental movement Earth First, Will Rausch, the conservation director at Wilderness Workshop, and Justin Patrick, communications associate at Wilderness Workshop. On Thursday at 5 at Pepke Auditorium, there's a screening of the movie Wrenched, The Legacy of the Monkey Wrench Gang, featuring Dave Foreman. You were inspired by the writing of Edward Abbey, and Earth First was founded by you and the organization that you built. Who today is carrying that flag?
Oh, certainly Paul Watson with the Sea Shepherd as, but I think there's no one person. There's not another Ed Abbey. There's not another Aldo Leopold. There's not another Dave Brower. As far as well-known leaders, I don't think we have them today, but we have all kinds of really good folks working hard locally. Will is the grandson of two of the greatest conservationists in American history. His grandparents, as individuals and with the Sierra Club, Ed and Peggy Wayburn, accomplished enormous things. They were key players in the Alaska Lands Campaign because they had the money to fly all over Alaska and check out potential new national parks. We don't have people like that.
Why do you
think? Sort of thing now.
Let me interrupt. Why do you, and Will, maybe, and Justin too, I mean, maybe you guys can comment here. Why do you think? Do you think there's, well, I'm not going to give you some ideas. Why?
Well, I might disagree a little bit with Dave that we don't have anybody. I think that folks like Bill McKibben, people at the grassroots level, you think of folks like Tim DeChristopher, who I think are kind of trying to stake out a leadership role. And maybe it's a bit more in the climate movement than in the public lands conservation movement. But I think those are folks who people see hope in, who people are willing to follow. And I think for up until very recently, the climate and kind of the habitat conservation movements were relatively separate. And I think people wanted to try and bring them together, but it just wasn't there. And in the past, really just year or less around some of the campaigns in the Arctic, around some of the momentum that folks are working on to keep fossil fuels in the ground. I think those public lands, kind of habitat conservation and climate movements have really come together. And maybe some of those leaders are still kind of coming up in those movements, but I see, you know, this past year actually is really hopeful with the president, saying no to the Keystone XL pipeline, with Shell pulling out of the Arctic, with there being, you know, kind of a legitimacy around saying no more fossil fuel leasing on public lands, even if we're a long way from actually achieving it. You know, I think these ideas, which would have seemed fringe or, you know, nobody thought we could stop the Keystone XL pipeline. So there's momentum there.
And the announcement by the Gates Foundation, that giant commitment to renewable energy, $5 billion.
Right.
That's a hopeful sign.
Yeah, yeah.
I would also say that young people are probably more decentralized than their predecessors were today. I think they take action themselves. And I believe that millennials have a deep appreciation for the outdoors. And I think they're probably aware, more so than the generations before them, of the problems that are encroaching upon every corner of the globe, as Dave mentioned. And I think they're probably more willing to take on personal sacrifice in order to sustain our planet in the future. So I don't think they're going to be, you know, 20 years from now as materialistic and thing oriented as previous generations of Americans have. I think they're going to come to the conclusion that sacrifices must be made, and we're going to embrace smaller houses and smaller spaces and probably smaller families too.
It's interesting that you bring that up because, Justin, that what we understand about millennials also is that they're not really joiners, that it's not giant movements that they come together, coalesce around, but exactly as you say, just independent, working independently in their own small way, that's how they tend to, that's what I understand about them. We do a little research about them because, you know, we want millennials to join Aspen Public Radio as members. And, you know, membership is not something that generation is particularly interested in. So that's a challenge that I think this movement might face.
Sure. And it's something we wrestle with at Wilderness Workshop as well, which is how to attract young people. But that said, I think being a young person myself and knowing many young people, I think that wilderness preservation is a very high value for them, even if they don't necessarily show it. They do believe it.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Dave Foreman, an American environmentalist and co-founder of the environmental movement Earth First, Will Rausch, the conservation director at Wilderness Workshop, and Justin Patrick, communications associate at Wilderness Workshop. On Thursday at 5 at Pepke Auditorium, there's a screening of the movie Wrenched, The Legacy of the Monkey Wrench Gang, featuring Dave Foreman. So let's talk about the screening. The movie is Wrenched. It's showing Thursday
at the Pepke Auditorium. We're very excited to be screening this film. It's called Wrenched, and it's about how Edward Abbey lit the flame of environmentalism and gave the movement its soul. And it's not just for Edward Abbey fans, although anyone who has read his books is going to love this documentary. It's a film for anyone who believes in the importance of protecting wild places. It's very intimate. It's an inspiring look at not just Edward Abbey's literature, but his life's work and the core of who this man was. It's the story of a movement and one that is as vital today as it was when it began.
I found myself a displaced person shortly after birth, and have been looking half my life for a place to take my stand.
There was just something about Ed Abbey that really spoke to us.
I regard the wilderness as my home, and when it's being invaded by clear cutters and strip miners, I feel not only the right, but the duty to defend it by any means I can.
Ed and I had found this D3 cat in the construction of that stinking highway down to the Colorado, so we turned the damn thing on and sent it off the cliff.
A demonstration of civil disobedience played out in Salt Lake this evening.
I started reading Edward Abbey when I was 18. I was old enough to understand it, but not quite old enough to realize that it wasn't a manual.
Would you do it again? Yeah.
Everything in the biotic community was gone. I saw that I wasn't the one who was nuts.
It was the very beginning of an environmental movement, but it belonged to a certain cast of people that the other people saw as threatening.
Earth First!
People were attracted to Earth First because it really said, let's save the United States.
They're not environmentalists, they're terrorists.
Defending the natural world, of course you're going to bring a lot of anger and hostility towards you, because there's so much money being made from destroying this planet.
These were people out there that had gone through everything that they had been taught to change things in our world if you see an injustice, and it didn't work.
What are we willing to do for a livable future?
This is a global issue, and it's about greed and materialism, and we are all involved and guilty.
Human society is like a stew. If you don't keep it stirred up, you get a lot of scum on top. Agitate.
I worked on it for about 7 years with the filmmaker, and I'm glad she finally got it done. I never knew that it was going to actually happen, but when it did, I was very pleased with it. And I think the context for the film and the context for Edward Abbey's great influence was about 1970 began the industrialization of the Southwest with the completion of Glen Canyon Dam, with the coal strip mining, with the building of power plants, and that sort of thing. What had been the cleanest airshed in the country suddenly became polluted. It was industrialized, and a lot of us were outraged by it. And Ed Abbey in many ways, was the voice of that outrage. And his books, including The Monkey Wrench Gang, were in some ways documentaries of what was going on. All of that kind of stuff was happening well before The Monkey Wrench Gang was written. And so Ed was a voice for certainly my generation of conservationists in the West.
And then some real success stories as a result of your efforts.
Well, things were accomplished, certainly. You know, when I grew up in Albuquerque, I could see Mount Taylor 65 miles away. In the 1970s, you couldn't see it because of the air pollution. But the outrage over that gave us the Clean Air Act. And now I go out on my deck, look across Albuquerque, and there's Mount Taylor 65 miles away. And so we did accomplish some things.
Are there parallels with then to now and fracking and what's happening again?
You know, the great irony is that Obama is trying to take this international leadership role on climate change, greenhouse gas pollution, and yet it is his administration that is pushing oil and gas leasing on BLM lands all over the West. One of the great wilderness areas, unprotected, is Desolation Canyon, the Green River Wilderness in Utah. And we've fought the Bush administration on that, but now the Obama administration is leasing oil and gas on the edges of the canyon and in the BLM wilderness study areas and roadless areas there, pushing and fracking, all of this. Obama talks out of both sides of his mouth on this.
Which leads us to our backyard. I mean, that's pretty close, Deso Gray. But here we have the Thompson Divide. But there's been some there's been some issues or some recent developments.
Yeah, and the story there, you know, maybe a little bit similar to what Dave was talking about. There were some basically leases issued during the Bush administration that really shouldn't have been issued. They were done without proper environmental review, essentially illegally issued leases since they didn't comply with several environmental laws. And, you know, fortunately, because of the outpouring of support in this community, the BLM has acknowledged that they issued those leases improperly and has gone back and reanalyzed them, decided that they need to take a second look and decide whether to either cancel the leases or keep them or add some additional stipulations to them. And right now we're kind of at a crucial point in that campaign. The BLM's come out with a draft environmental impact statement, and their proposed action, kind of the best indication of where they're headed, would cancel a number of those leases, and most specifically in the Thompson Divide. So it's good news. We at the Wilderness Workshop.
Well, that's good work on your part.
Well, thanks, Dave, and we really owe it to kind of the whole community. I mean, the BLM's received, you know, tens of thousands of comments over the years asking them to do this. And I think that's a big part of why they're where they are now. And so there's a series of public meetings, not this week, but next week, Monday in Glenwood, Tuesday down in Dubec, and Wednesday in Carbondale. And you know, we've packed the house before. Now that the BLM looks like they're on the right track, we need to, you know, have standing room only to kind of encourage them and make sure they stand with us in the effort to protect the Thompson Divide.
And then this week, the screening on Thursday.
Yeah. You know, we loved talking to Dave today, and Dave, you're so good at interviewing, and this film is just packed with on-screen interviews with colleagues and admirers of Ed Abbey. Robert Redford, for example, recounts his trip with Abbey along the Outlaw Trail as he was preparing to shoot Butch Cassidy in The Sundance Kid. That trip was covered by National Geographic. Tim DeChristopher, Will was talking about him earlier. He's the modern-day monkey wrencher who was imprisoned after placing fake bids. He's on there. Dave Foreman is heavily featured in All His Glory. It's just a great portrait of people who knew Edward Abbey. And I think one of my favorite things after watching the film was just what a lively writer Edward Abbey was and what a lively personality he was. Because, you know, most of the time when we think of authors, we think of them as kind of reclusive and standoffish. And especially you'd think that would be true of one of America's best wilderness writers. But he's not that way at all. He's real friendly. He was very much involved in the movement himself. He was a participant. He believed in the cause so much that his writing was just an extension of this.
Dave, yeah. I wanted to ask you, what was Ed Abbey like when you were, what was it like being out in the desert with him?
He was just a nice guy. You know, when I first met him, he was this larger-than-life figure, but he became just a friend. And we would have barbecues at his house or at my house in Tucson, and Doug Peacock and his family would show up, and he was a great guy. The funny thing was is that Abbey was not an expert on conservation or on conservation issues. I used to ask him for advice on strategy, and he'd sort of struck his beard and said, "Well, Dave, I don't know. What do you think?" And throw it back to me. You know, that was not, Ed was not a conservation expert. He didn't understand all the ins and outs of the agency, but he was the inspiration.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests are Dave Forman, an American environmentalist and co-founder of the environmental movement Earth First, Will Rausch, the conservation director at Wilderness Workshop, and Justin Patrick, communications associate at Wilderness Workshop. On Thursday at 5 at Pepke Auditorium, there's a screening of the movie Wrenched, The Legacy of the Monkey Wrench Gang, featuring Dave Forman.
So many of the characters in his books are based off of real people who are interviewed in this film. So anyone who's a fan is just going to love this movie. And Dave, you're one of the people featured in that film, and we're so thankful to have you there. Dave, of course, will be signing books beforehand at 4 o'clock on Thursday. And then Dave will also be answering participating in a Q&A session after the movie ends. Doors open at 4:30, 5 o'clock, intro by Dave Forman, and 5:15 sharp, the movie starts. At Pepke Auditorium, you can get your tickets at www.wildernessworkshop.org/wrenched.
Thank you so much for your time. Dave Forman, currently the Senior Conservation Analyst for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. Justin Patrick is the Communications Associate of Wilderness Workshop, Will Rausch, Conservation Director. The film is showing Pepke Auditorium Thursday. Wildernessworkshop.org is the website.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carolyn.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.